Hey, you guys, welcome back to Listen Bitch Presents Tell Me Why You're Special. And this is the arena where people don't run from the hard shit. They walk straight towards it. Because you weren't created to live numb or disconnected or even comfortable, okay, and safe and cozy and protected. God's DNA is in you, even in the pain, even in the loss, and everything that you've been through is not meaningless. Everything. That is your message. And today's guest is Teresa Evans. She's an ICU nurse who didn't just witness death. She walked through it with her mother. And that's all I'm going to tell you of her story because that was the whole point of bringing her on. So you guys don't have to hear me. I'm super honored to bring Teresa to the show. She's in the hot seat. Teresa, this is your, we'll call it the elevator pitch. Tell us who you are and what do you do?
Okay. Well, what do I do? I've done many things. I don't work as a nurse anymore. I actually left that career in 2003, but I did have 15 years of critical care nursing. I had to step away from the traditional medical system. I needed a break, and I opened a yoga studio. I ran a yoga studio for 12 years, and then I traveled internationally for 5 years teaching something called clinical somatics, which is the same vein. It's just all about self-awareness and can, like you said at the beginning of the show, life is asking us all the time to show up whether we're comfortable or not. It's sometimes it's not comfortable. Sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's really hard, but we still have to show up for it. And then as it turned out, right when I thought things were disintegrating for me with COVID rolled around, I lost all of my contracts for teaching because I couldn't travel, because it was all international travel. And at that time, my mom made the decision to die with medical assistance and death. And so I thought, okay, universe, you just gave me time. Which I, she had been sick for several for a long time, and even to the point where I had said to my sisters, because of course when you're traveling and you're teaching and people have paid thousands of dollars to come to a workshop, like I'm teaching that, say I'm in Australia, and I said to my sisters, I'm like, if mom dies, don't call me, because
You're
what can I
right.
do?
Exactly.
She's dead. It sounds so abrasive.
It's not.
And I said that, and then having gone through this experience and being with her, I thought, how could I have ever thought that I couldn't be present for my mom at the end of her life?
Well, I think it worked out for you to be there, but I think the idea is correct. Like if you're in the middle of something and you're serving people and you're in that experience, there is nothing you can do. Like if she's already
No.
gone, what's the point in not serving that space and speaking to that one person that is there for you? So I think the idea was right. And then obviously God gave you that chance to be with her
Yes.
in that space. And I mean, with your job, with your experience in healthcare, I have several questions. One being, I don't, do I ask them one at a time? I don't know if my brain will do that, if I'll remember it. You've been present for people at the end of their life. You're in the ICU that is intensive care unit, which means there's a thin line for people to cross to be able to get released from the ICU unit. Okay, there's serious issues, I'm assuming. But like, how did that set you up for the process with your mom, where it was something, you know, first of all, I don't know how I would feel with a family member saying, I'm choosing to end this. I guess you were set up in a way like you see her sick and suffering, and maybe it is fair that it's on her terms. And also, why did you leave the healthcare?
Well, I'll answer the second question first, was that I think had I not spent all of my nursing years in intensive care units, I probably could imagine that I might still be involved in healthcare. But there actually came a time where I just felt like sometimes people just need to die. It's okay. And I felt like So my last job in a hospital was working in transplant. And that's a really intense place to be. And first of all, I want everyone to know that I have no judgment. I mean, we are all making our choices about what is right,
Of
what we feel
course.
like we need to do, right? So, but for me, I worked as a case manager the la in transplant at the end of my nursing career. And where I saw people that were actually, they wanted to die. They were asking to die, and yet they were so far into the medical system that it was like there was no stopping it.
Wow.
And I mean, especially with transplant. And I remember once questioning a surgeon, and I'm like, what the fuck? I mean, what?
Yeah.
Excuse me, but you know,
Yeah.
why? Like, this person doesn't, they're done. And he's like, you know what? That person was lucky enough to get those organs. And once you get on the transplant train,
Yeah.
there's no getting off it
Wow.
until we can put someone on dialysis, we can keep them alive on a ventilator, but there's this compulsion to have to do every possible intervention. And I understand that organs are precious, right? And
Yeah.
few in between.
Yeah.
So, but it was like those moments that I started having more of those moments where it was sort of butting up against my own value system.
Yeah.
And it was a learning experience for me because I was an educator there. And as an educator, it wasn't my job to make a choice for somebody or to convince somebody one way or another. My
Yeah.
job was to make sure that they knew what they were getting into, that
To make an
informed
educated
consent.
guess. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. So, your first question, back to my mom making this decision, I
Yeah.
actually was the one who I had been calling her almost every day, wherever I was in the world, because I knew that she had been ill for years and I didn't know when she might die. And
Yeah.
I would say for a good year, every time I called her, she was suffering. So there was no quality of life. She was still living at home independently. She
Yeah.
loved two things, gardening and painting, watercolors. She was a beautiful artist, and she couldn't do either of those. And I knew from my nursing perspective that there was nothing else that could be done with Western medicine.
Yeah.
My sisters and I had done everything that we could do to help her with alternative medicines, and I quite frankly didn't even understand how she was still alive. But I said to her, I said, you know, Mom, I said, I'm not trying to off you by any means. I said, I can't actually imagine you not being here, but you live in a country where you have a choice because my mom, because I'm Canadian, I live in the States, but my family lives in Canada. And I said, I'm not, again, I'm not suggesting this. I'm
Yeah.
just telling you. I think the worst place for any of us to be is when we feel backed against a wall, like we have no way out. And I wanted her to know that she had a choice. And I just said, whatever, if you decide you want to investigate that, if you decide you don't want to, fine. If you decide you want to, I will support you 100%, whatever it is. It's just,
An option.
it was an, yeah. And I
So,
honestly didn't think she'd do it.
how did she take that conversation, and did it take her time? Like how long from the beginning of the conversation for her to like make a decision to choose her date? What's that like?
I would say, I mean, we talked a lot, and I think it was about a month. You have to set up interviews with two independent doctors.
Okay.
So she did her interviews and she was approved. Not everybody's approved. There's a lot of misconceptions, you know, that anyone can have made whenever they want
Yeah.
it, but that's not
I
the
don't know
case.
anything about it, so I'm
Yeah.
learning
So you have
today.
to have two doctors' approval,
Okay.
two independent doctors that don't, they're not collaborating to make this happen. They're,
Okay.
you know, you have to You have to show that you're in a that you're on a downhill spiral that is not going to get turned around.
Right.
Mom did this in 2020, and at that time, I think it was a 2 week waiting period. Once you made the decision, at the time that you actually receive the medication, the last thing the doctor asks you is, do you still want to receive this medication that will end your life?
Yeah.
So you have to be able to, first and foremost, you have to be able to make informed consent. Nobody can make it for you.
Yeah.
I mean, if she had had a stroke and lost her ability to speak before this happened, it wouldn't have happened.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so you have to, you know, this is part of the safeguards that are in
Yeah.
place. So then she was like, she said, I think I'm going to do it. And I said, all right. And she said, when should I do it?
Oh.
And this was probably in May that we were talking.
Yeah.
And I said, I don't know, Mom. I said, why don't you do it on your birthday? I said, go out on your birthday, go out on the
Yeah.
same day that you came in. Maybe you'll go through the same portal. Who
Yeah.
knows? You know? So she chose her birthday. It was her 80th birthday, November 15th. And I was still traveling at that point. And then everything got stopped. And I just went to Canada. I went quarantined for 2 weeks and I moved in with her. And I hadn't lived with her since I was 14.
Wow.
So it was, you know, it was a,
Interesting. Yeah.
yeah. I mean, we had done a lot of healing. We were very close, but
Yeah.
it had been a long time. I lived 1,000 miles away from my family my entire life.
Yeah.
So.
I'm so intrigued by the story 'cause I mean, I don't I've never known anything like this, never knew. I didn't know that was really a thing that was optional. So I'm intrigued. I'm curious, like, what's her quality of life at this point for her to decide that? Like, I mean, being sick, can you paint the picture of like, you know, was
She
she just
was
on in pain, tons of medication? What is it? What is she going through?
chronic pain. She had end-stage heart failure. She had had a heart attack when she was 60. So she did have some good years after open heart surgery, but her heart never really
Recovered.
recovered. And she had COPD. She wasn't really a smoker, but you know, you don't always have to be a smoker. So she was on oxygen. It was like some days she was fine, and other days she couldn't get out of bed. And like I took her on a fossil hunt. We just turned the last 3 months into a huge celebration of her.
Yeah.
And one of the things she loved doing was fossil hunting. So maybe a week and a half or 2 weeks it was before she was dying, before her birthday. We went on a fossil hunt and it was an amazing day. But I mean, getting her home
Yeah.
and getting her back into bed was such a, she needed 2 days of recovery time.
Right.
So that's what her quality of life was like.
Yeah.
And, you
And
know, there is an argument, and I kind of agree with it, that if we had the resources for
yeah.
people to really have the care that they need it, palliative care, hospice care, or whatever, we wouldn't have a need for MAID. That MAID has come along because we don't have the resources. Now, I see it both ways. I did see my mother struggle for really good pain control. You know, as we all went through the whole opioid epidemic,
Right.
it became harder and harder to get pain medication. And every time she went to the doctor, she'd be terrified that they were going to take away what they were giving her, which wasn't even
Yeah.
enough to really control her pain.
Right.
So there was a lot, she had a lot of complex medical issues. And for me, I can tell you, Brandon, there was a moment, I mean, there were moments for all of us where my two sisters, where I think we thought we were going to crack in half. We were like, how can we How can we
Let's,
actually live through this?
yeah.
But we did. And I mean, I think that's what makes me a badass bitch, right? That's what that's like. I showed up for this hard moment, and it wasn't about what I was feeling. It was about what mom needed. And so one of the things that when you know, I mean, it's very strange to know the exact day and time that your mother is going to die.
Yeah, I'm so, again, I'm intrigued. I think that's the best word for this right now. I'm like on the edge of my seat, like, wow. So they send you pills. That's the process.
No, that's in Canada, you can get an IV. You can have the doctor come and put an IV. So they in the States, you have to be able to ingest the pills on your own. So there's 14 states where it's
So they
legal
do
right
that
now.
here. I did not know that either. I'm learning something new.
There's 14 states where it's legal right now. Oregon was the first, and Oregon was legalized, I think, in 2007, back before Canada ever. Canada legalized it in 2016. So mom was 2020, so they were 4 years into the program. The
So
doctor, the
he
nurse
comes with an
comes.
IV.
Yeah, the nurse comes and to your home. Mom was home. I mean, some people are in a hospital, some people are in a nursing home. Mom was home, still living independently. And the nurse comes and she puts the IV in, and the doctor shows up a few minutes before the allotted time and gives her the medicine, and she flew out of her body, is how I like to say it.
Yeah, so like it puts her to sleep. Like how I just am.
Well, there's three medications that you I can
Like
see
I'm
it in
like,
your
do you see my
eyes.
face right now? If you guys aren't watching the video, just watch it, okay? This is real time. I didn't mentally prepare for this, and we're in it now. So my thing is like, number one, for someone that would do this, I would say, 'cause here's the deal, as a kid, and trigger warning for people, I don't know, do you need a trigger warning? But like, there's been times I contemplated suicide, you know, where I really felt like I wanted to do it at points in my life when I was spiraling. And I feel like I never had the courage to follow through. And so now I'm thinking this is incredible because she has this life, she has beautiful kids, she's here. So that day he shows up with the IV. I just am curious, like, was she scared? Like, how do you face that? It would be terrifying to me.
Well, during that time that I spent with her, we did a lot of talking about death and dying and a lot of philosophical conversations. We did mushrooms with her for 3 Sundays in a row to try to get her, out of her head and just like a sense of the largeness that we are, much, much larger than these physical bodies that we live in, right? And mom was Catholic. This is not sanctioned by the Catholic Church.
And that's what I'm thinking. For me, morally, like that would scare me even more because am I doing the right thing? So I just feel like there would be so much to process,
There
and
was,
like that, I just what is it like that morning?
That morning was, well, it was her birthday, and I don't want to give away the book, but, my sister got up and made her a birthday cake. So it was supposed to happen at 10 o'clock in the morning, and my sister got up and made a birthday cake, and we had the cake. We it was somber, but it wasn't morbid. We had set up a beautiful altar. We had put fairy lights in her room. We had really just prepared the most precious space. She wanted George Harrison singing My Sweet Lord. She was
No.
very close to God.
Sweet.
I mean, she said to me, because at one point she said she had a conversation planned with a nun who had been visiting her in the hospital. I'm like, Mom, you know that she's going to. This is not going to go well. I mean, she's not going to give you her blessing. I can tell you that. And mom said, listen, if somebody can talk me out of this, then I shouldn't be doing it.
Yeah, I agree with that. And Mom, I
And
would have
I,
tried to talk you out of it.
well, she, I thought, I mean, at that moment, I realized how strong she was in her conviction that she was going to do
I
this.
love that because I'm sure that gave you guys that peace to be able
It
to just
did.
like love her and celebrate her. So I think that was an incredible, that's an incredible piece of the story.
Yeah, I write in the book, I think I said I just stood in her power in that moment
Yeah.
and admired her. And she said to me, "You know what?" She said, "Man's interventions are keeping me alive, and man's
There.
interventions will end this suffering." And she said, "My relationship with God is solid. He is
Solid.
waiting for me." She never wavered in that.
Yeah.
She had been praying Catholic. So she'd been praying, she had three rosaries that she'd been
Yeah.
praying for years, and one for each of us. She has three daughters. And we said the rosary that morning. She had last rites the day before the minister came to the house. I don't think it was a Catholic priest because I don't know that they can actually do that. I
Yeah.
mean, this is
I don't know
it's,
about
but
that.
you know what? The other thing, Brandon, let me just
Yeah.
clarify right away is that this is so different than somebody making a choice to kill themselves
Oh,
with
I
suicide.
agree. Yeah, I
It is
agree
completely
wholeheartedly.
different.
Yeah.
People who are opposed to assisted dying will use the term assisted suicide. And as soon as I hear that, I already know that there's a story that they have that, you
Miscommunication,
know,
yeah.
yeah, this is a person in their right mind
Yeah.
making an informed decision that is supported by medical evidence that they have no quality, their quality of life is such that they don't have any and
Yeah.
it's not going to get any better.
Right.
So it's not an emotional reaction to,
Yeah.
I've had suicide touch me with a family member, and the experience is very
Very
different. It's
different. Oh,
devastating,
yeah.
you know, it's
Yeah.
devastating. That being said, I've always felt like that must have been the only decision they felt like they could make at that moment.
It's, yeah, I mean, it is. It's in that moment, anybody that follows through something like that, and I in no means wanted to take away or confuse the experience that
Yeah.
your mom went through when I brought that up. It was just the courage of actually facing death. And I think, you know, even no matter how faithful you are, I think it's human to be afraid of that. But I think if you're at the point where I love that you said that, you know, she gave you that piece of like man intened, and that's the only
Yeah.
reason I'm alive, and man intervenes again, and I go. Like
Yeah.
that for me, I mean, I totally see a huge understanding there.
Yeah.
But yeah, suicide is a whole different, it is a
Yes.
very different ball game
It,
altogether,
yeah.
because that
Yeah.
is, you know, that's a decision not based on quality of life. That's a decision based in an emotional trauma response for whatever is happening in the moment. And I, you know, very different things. I think what you experienced has got to be such a gift, you know, and for your mom to get to do that on her terms,
Yeah.
you know, to say like how far does the suffering go, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, what could she have done? Could she have stopped taking all of her medications? But that would have been a miserable way to go.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is, how much do we have to suffer?
Right.
We have the means, and I will say, and again, for all of your listeners,
Yeah.
I'm showing up saying, "I don't know. I
Yeah.
just had to show up for a really difficult moment and I did my best. I don't know what the right answer is for other people.
Right.
You know, I just, I don't, I just did what felt like the right thing to do for my mom in the moment." I do think, and it was a beautiful passing. Most of the people who don't support it, it's usually a religious issue and it's a value-driven issue. And, for some people, I mean, I understand that too. I mean, the thing is, like I say to people, I don't think everybody should choose MAID, so medical assistance in dying, but I do feel that everybody should have the choice.
And
I feel that everybody should have the choice.
I respect that. And there's a lot of people, and I literally just an interview I had right before yours, he said, this would have happened and I would have been a vegetable, just take me out. And how many people say that? Like, if I don't have a quality of life, we have the conversation about life support. We have the conversation about transplant. We have these conversations. Like, if there's a point where, medical intervention is keeping me alive, life support, don't, like just let that go. And I kind of feel like you just don't know. I can never judge what someone's experience is ever. You don't know what people are going through. You don't know the level of pain. You don't know the level, like that quality of life. And what is your purpose? If your purpose is not waking up and feeling good and growing in your potential and, kind of moving with that, and you hit that brick wall, then what are you here for? And why should there be like prolonged suffering for everybody? Keeping someone on life support is really for the people that are here. For them to have something to cling on to when, how many times is that person really already gone? And
Well, we feel that way. I mean, I agree with you 100%, but again, being in that situation, I mean, I did, I don't know that it happens as much as, I haven't been in active nursing since 2003. So that's 23 years. So I would hope that we've made advances. But back then, when advanced directives were coming into play, and that's part of the reason I wrote the book, was first of all, it was the most profound. I say the two most profound experiences that I've ever had in my life were giving birth to my daughter and being with my mother when she
When she
died.
died.
And I mean, I've never written a book before. I was just compelled to have to write this story. And in part, I wanted to give, what I'm hoping is that it will just spark conversations like we're having. So that you'll have, like, I try to have this conversation with my daughter. I'm like, "Hun, I want you to understand, I don't want to be on life support if there's no chance of recovery. These are," she's like, "Oh, Mom, we don't need to have this conversation now. You're going to live
We
forever,"
all do
right? But
that.
that's her discomfort in it, in thinking that I could possibly not be alive at some point. And I remember my mom saying to us, my mom was a little bit of a drama queen, and I remember her saying, "You girls are going to fall to your knees when I leave." And but she said, "I want you to know that if there's any way I can support you from wherever I am, I will, and that this will ease up." And we're like, "Yeah, all right, Mom." And it's true. I mean, it
You did
is
it.
true. I think while Mom was alive, we were all so laser focused on showing up for her. Like, we didn't want to lay our grief on top of her
Of
experience.
course.
Of course, we couldn't always, we didn't try to hide it, but we didn't spend 3 months blubbering and
Crying,
crying
trauma
about the fact.
dumping.
No, we were like, "Okay, what do you want to do, Mom? Oh, you want to go on another fossil hunt? You want to go to your favorite hot dog joint? You want to ha have another game of bingo? You want to," I mean, one of the things, I'll just show you the cover of the book, is beautiful. You can see it. This
Choosing
is a yellow
something.
snapdragon.
Okay.
And so, like I said, Mom was a master gardener. And so she asked me during the time I was there if I would put her garden to rest,
Yeah.
which was such an honor. And so I spent the 3 months working a lot in her garden. And as I was working in her garden, I'm like, "This is happening all the time in nature."
Yeah.
I mean, nature is showing us integration and disintegration, all of the natural cycles that we go through. And so I thought when I began writing, I thought, how can I tell this story in a way that isn't so shocking that people can't even read it? And so I decided to tell it through the lens of Mom's Garden. So each chapter, it's told through the lens of botany, and each chapter focuses on a different perennial, a different flower that was in Mom's Garden. And as I tell the story about what phase we're at with Mom, what's happening with Mom, I'm describing how I see that happening in nature with the plants.
That's
So
amazing. What a beautiful gift that you use to carry on the legacy of not just her, but like celebrating her life and being able to celebrate her death and to be a part of that whole experience in a way that a lot of people don't get, you know? If my last question, because we're coming up on our time frame here, my
okay.
last question, then make sure you tell everybody where they can find your book.
Okay.
And I'll leave things in the show notes, you guys, so you won't be completely out of it. But if you could sit with your mom one more time today, right now, what would you say to her?
Oh my God. I think I would just tell her how much I love her and thank her for being such an amazing teacher. I mean, she's still teaching me now. Before we got on this podcast, I sat with my eyes closed and I said, "Okay, Mom, help me find the right words for this conversation." So I talk to her all the time.
That's
Yeah.
beautiful. That is beautiful. Where can we find your book?
So I have a website, TeresaEEvans.com. And on the website, there's all the links for Amazon, Barnes and Noble, Tertulia, bookshop.org. You can buy the I recorded the audiobook is beautiful, if I do say so myself. So there's an ebook version that you can buy right on my website, or you can get it on Amazon. And so it just launched on March 3rd. So this is all brand
Congrats.
new.
It's
And I
so
have plans for the second book, which is going to be the period following Mom's death and going through the grieving process and what that was like.
You guys stay tuned. Make sure you stay resourced with Teresa. And I need to learn. This is, you know, Teresa and I are both kind of talking. We're kind of newbies at this podcast thing, right? At guesting. I've been doing podcasts forever, but having guests on. You think I'm gonna learn to stop asking the emotional questions because it's really hard to hold my shit together sometimes, you guys, okay? I'm like, don't lose it, don't lose it. I'm pinching my leg and all the things so I can maintain composure, y'all. So I need to ask less emotional questions. I'm learning. But Teresa, I'm gonna tell you what I think makes you incredibly special. Not just that, you know, y your experience of being present for death, but it's like how you chose to show up inside of it, like to be able to see the perspectives. You didn't numb it, you didn't run from it. You walked with your mother, fully aware, fully present, fully loving to give her the most incredible experience. And I think that almost takes more courage than what I think she had to have courage to choose. I just It's a level of courage I don't think a lot of people can reach. And you have taken that experience and turned it into something that can help other people navigate one of the hardest things they're ever going to face. And I am so grateful and honored that you shared this story here because number one, I've never had this conversation on my radar. I didn't know about any of this happening in my little bubble. So just to I learned something new today, and I appreciate you sharing something so personal and so beautiful with everyone to bring awareness to these conversations. It's not just strength. Like you are stewarding an incredible purpose and an incredible potential, and God bless your journey. I think the work that you're doing is incredibly special, and I'm grateful that you took the time here to share this incredible story. To everyone listening, you guys, life is fragile. You don't get unlimited time. So the conversations that you're avoiding, the love that you're holding back, or, the shit that you keep putting off, like that stuff matters. God didn't give you this life to sleepwalk through it. You are here to feel it. You wanted the human experience. We're here to feel it, to live it, and to love as deeply as we can while we still can. So I'm calling you out. I want you to be present. I want you to be creative, courageous, magnetic, and please remember, your mess is your message. Even in grief, even in loss, even in the hardest endings, they still carry something that can help someone else. It's going to help someone else. And you guys, listen, podcasting is one of the most powerful tools right now. And like nobody's using it the right way. And I see that now. If you have a story like this, one that could help someone breathe a little easier, change a perspective, soften a little, you need to be using your voice. And so I created a podcast support group. You guys, it's on Facebook. I want to help you simplify it. It's a free group. Maybe you need to start your show. Maybe you need to share what you've been going through in a way that matters. Maybe you need to come in that support group and get on other people's shows to continue the awareness of your story because your story matters. Okay? Just truth. If you've been sitting on the story, join the group, get in the arena, use your voice, and please, you guys, share this episode. Share it out wherever you can, or specifically with someone who needs it. Make sure you like and subscribe so you don't miss another episode. Get in the links and please grab the book and continue this conversation. Help us share Teresa's story and Teresa's journey because I guarantee you know someone who maybe hasn't talked about it, but they're thinking about it. And so let's prompt the conversation, you guys. Yeah, and if you ever get ready for it, come in the hot seat and tell me why you're special. Thanks again, Teresa. This was, God bless your journey, truly.
Thank you, Brandon. It was great. I love chatting with you.